Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a young entrepreneur who I have known for the last 4 or 5 years. I first met him in San Francisco. And someone who made quite a big name for himself. Ruchit Garg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Ruchit has studied at Kendriya Vidyalaya. He worked for Microsoft. Then he founded a company called Nine Slides, which he sold to LimeAid. He's a very, very highly recognized and globally awarded individual across many, many places. He's a mentor at Singularity University. And most importantly, he's the founder of Harvesting, a company that is changing the lives of farmers. Ruchit, you worked for a little while in your early career and then you became an entrepreneur. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
I think so. My first business... little bit of my history. My father died when I was only 9 years old. So we faced a lot of financial challenges growing up. There was a time our family was living in a 10 by 10 room. Me, my two other brothers and mom. That pushed us too much in terms of financial issues. And we started thinking about how can we survive. So I started giving tuitions to the same schoolmates. A few years junior to me, sometimes the same class and so on and so forth. And my first business ended up being at around 9 or 10 when I was renting the comic books, which I used to buy for myself, generating more money for my next year summer vacations and so forth. So I have been always doing things. My first company was in 2004 in India. Pre-iPhone, I was selling games. Trying to sell games to Airtel, BPL, Spice and so forth. So I've been always doing some experiments and here and there.
And then Microsoft took you to USA.
Right.
And then you again became an entrepreneur with Nine Slides.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about
that. I think I got bored after working for several years, at first in Microsoft R&D here in India and then in USA where I helped them build Xbox, Windows operating system, mobile phone, was part of the team. And at some point I got bored, I decided to quit and built Nine Slides where we are trying to change online communication. We ended up got acquired by LimeAid, who was one of our customers. That's pretty much it.
And were you ever worried that these ventures may not succeed?
There's always worry.
There was so much confidence inside you.
I think the way I see it is because we came from nowhere, the only thought was what will happen most. I mean, we had nothing. So if we fail, we may not have anything again. But if we could come from where we came, we can build it again. That was the only thought.
Very interesting. And then after your first significant exit of Nine Slides to LimeAid, what did this do to you and your life? I mean, you know, very, very few entrepreneurs actually get a successful exit. And you were one of the few people.
It was a small exit. But for me, I realized that it took blood and sweat 4 or 5 years. It not only impacted me physically, mentally, but also the family. Like, you know, you're all not at home and so on and so forth. I realized that it's not worth chasing just the money part. I wanted to do something which has a more positive impact to the world. And given my grandfather was a small farmer back in India, I thought maybe I should do something for small farmers. Started doing research, I realized there are about 500 million small farmers in the world who feed 80% of the entire planet. And they are unfortunately among the most underserved communities in the whole entire planet. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started thinking about what is it that I can do. And in that thesis, you know, Harvesting is formed. Okay.
And tell us a little bit about Harvesting.
So what I realized that, you know, if you look at the farmers, they have 3 or 4 major issues: access to market, access to inputs such as seeds, fertilizers, and access to finances and insurance. And all of these problems are fundamentally because of information asymmetry between the farmer and anyone else in the value chain. So on one side, you have a lot of people with money who would want to give loans at 100% interest rate or 50% interest rate if they want to. Mm-hmm. But then because of the lack of information on what may be happening at the farm level, there's so much asymmetry that these transactions are very, very, there's a lot of friction happening in there. So my initial focus at Harvesting have been that what if using advanced technologies such as AI and remote sensing, can we look at the farm from the satellites and assess what may be happening? So if you can, if somehow if we know the farm boundary, then can we predict what is happening at the farm, what is the crop, what is the type?
So just for our viewers and listeners to understand, if I have a 1 acre plot of land somewhere up in the Himalayas,
right,
what are the things that I can hope to get from harvesting?
So at some point in future, we can't do all the places, okay, including Himalaya right now because of cloud coverage.
Pick any place, yeah.
But we can do about 17 variables. Mm-hmm. If I have the polygon of the farm, we can tell whether it is a cropland versus a fallow land.
Okay.
We can tell what when you may have harvested for the last few years, what was your planting date, harvesting date, what kind of crop it might be.
Okay.
And then we can give some referential right now on terms of the production is high or low compared to previous years. We can also provide some other scientific data points such as the height and slope and weather data for
and all plot. This is going to come from satellites.
We're looking at satellite data. We work we get data from NASA, mm-hmm, as well as European Space Agency satellites.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this is something which is at a very macro level,
right?
You know, say for the state of Uttar Pradesh or somewhere in Africa, and I know you do a lot of work in a lot of these countries. But how do you reach that individual farmer whose life you have decided to make better?
So again, initial, and there's a lot of experimentation happening every day, but initial thought process was, it's very hard to go to these number of small farmers. What if we can impact the intermediaries such as lenders or insurance companies? So if I can provide data to a lender, then maybe if it takes 6 months for loan to get approved, if you can reduce it to 1 week, that's a huge impact in terms of farmers' life. That's what we have been focusing. But lately I have shifted the gear and we have decided to work directly with the farmers, where we are building the community of farmers using the mobile phone. We have about 20 states in India where farmers are using our app to identify the issues they have with their crop. So if they have a sick crop, they just take a picture and put it on the mobile app we have called Harvesting Farmer Network. And all the other farmers in the network, scientists, advisors, they immediately tell them that, hey, you know, you have this worm, you have to put this kind of pesticide, and they get free advice. On the same platform, we now allow them to sell their animals. So people are selling, you know, sheep and goats and coconuts and maize and chilies and whatnot.
So Harvesting, you're building like a platform.
Yes.
Where all the farmers can then come.
Yes.
And offer their produce.
Right.
Their livestock.
Right.
And can also get information.
Free advice. Yes. Yes. And some of the large transactions, although it's all open, all free for, mm-hmm, any farmers, mm-hmm, we have started getting large inquiries. For example, we have buyer who want to buy 100 tons of maize every month, mm-hmm, 50 tons of onion every week. So for those large inquiries, we are now handholding that process because we can become that trustworthy agent between the buyer and the seller, mm-hmm, making sure the quality is fine, making sure the farmer gets money and so forth. So that's where we are heading right now.
So, help me understand, I'm a little confused. Harvesting as an entity is supposed to give inputs to farmers to improve their life.
Right.
But you are now saying you're becoming like a trading platform.
So, we would make money as a trader, but we are different than a typical aarti or a trader because we also enable farmer to get free access to the best advice through the mobile phone. We also enable them to sell whatever they want at their own will, mm-hmm, through this free platform. But for large value transaction, we do, if they want, they can avail our services and we take a small commission out of it.
Okay. And, you know, the farming community, as you said, is across the whole world. and yet I have seen you build this from scratch.
Yeah.
What has been some of your some of your challenges as you built Harvesting? And I do know that you've got a long way to go.
Right. I think challenge have been probably just from my superficial understanding of the issues, I would say. And not being or not focusing on one region, I think, was the biggest challenge. And that was one of the reasons
Help
I moved
understand.
To India.
That.
So I wanted to sort of conquer the world. Mm-hmm. And I was serving farmers or trying to serve farmers in Myanmar, Uganda, you know, Kenya, Nigeria, Latin America. But I think in the process, I was not able to focus with the small team and resources we had. Mm. And I think that was one of the biggest challenge in my mind, that we should have focused in one region. That would have resulted in more ROI, if I can say that.
Mm-hmm. So you're now scaling back a little bit?
We're scaling back in terms of different regions, learning to say no, and focusing or doubling or tripling down on India, and trying to do all aspects of farming. I'm more on the field. I'm buying produce myself. I'm taking truck 2 a.m. in the mandi to sell, to see how traders cheat or how they deal with farmers, and trying to understand the nitty-gritty of the system.
So someone was telling me, and I was talking, saying that, you know, if you're the farmer at the center, you spoke of insurance, you spoke of credit, right? You spoke about data and analytics. But I was told that the largest input cost for a farmer is the tractor, the harvester, the seeds, the fertilizers. Are you also looking at these areas?
So there are two sides of the chain, and you know that, right? One is on the import and one on the market linkages. Right now, we are focusing mostly on the market linkages, and all the input sides, we are making it available for free, which they can leverage through the community knowledge base. Mm-hmm. As far as pricing is concerned, yes, in input wise, I could see from the last retail seller, farmers pay about 2x, 3x of the original price. So if it is of 10 rupees seed, he will buy from 80, 90 rupees. So there is a lot of gap there, which can be filled. Yeah.
And you don't see an app like an Amazon,
right,
which can then ensure that the seeds and the other farming inputs, small, can be ordered online by farmers?
It can be. And actually, in our app, you would be able to do that in future. We are not doing it right away, again, trying to focus.
Yeah.
Because while advisors are saying, hey, buy this pesticide 2 ml per acre, there could be another button there saying, you know, place the order and it will magically arrive next day. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a huge rural e-commerce opportunity in front of us. Mm-hmm. But again, we just want to make sure that we first make some money for the farmer. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in the process, we'll have trust and then they will also buy from us.
And what kind of, you know, farming is a very political subject.
Right.
Every politician is involved with farmers. What kind of influence do politicians have in your business? Or do they have any impact at all?
There's definitely a lot of say. Farmers go by their leaders. So if, let's say, in a village, there is a sarpanch, who we can, if we consider that as a political post, they would want one successful guy to be using new technology, new system. Mm-hmm. And if he's successful, then and everybody down the chain, they would like to use it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, you know, a way farmers are interacting with the political system. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, there also, I feel that farmers, they're now getting used to subsidies. So even if there are a lot of rich farmers. I was surprised. I was in, I stayed two nights very near to a Pakistan border in Punjab. And I saw these farmers, some of these farmers are making 50 lakhs rupees tax-free. They don't have to pay water bill. They don't have to pay electricity bill. There's almost no expenses and they're still looking for subsidies and so on and so forth. So there's mismatch there, you know. Yeah.
interesting. You have a, you know, team, you built a team across the globe with a lot of global managers. How will they be able to adjust to working in India?
So we have mostly been operating very remotely. So we have some scientists in Europe, we have some scientists in different parts of US, some in India, and some of them I have never met actually. So for them, I'm still on internet, so it doesn't matter. Maybe what we have changed is meeting time, but we are still working as we used to before. And I think that's where the whole world is going, working remotely.
So one last question on harvesting before we move on. You know, a very critical input for every farmer is rain, is water. And I think that's a challenge around the whole world.
Right.
How do you plug in this information for the farmer?
So there is no easy way for water challenge to be solved. I think all the stakeholders need to come together, because it's a very sensitive subject. Although one crop needs water, there are a lot of crops like cotton and sugarcane, who they're great because that have a lot of short-term returns, but long-term it sucks away all the water from the soil. So even if, for example, if you look at Haryana state, government has announced some 1,000 rupees per acre if you go away from paddy. Farmers would still not take it, because the money he will make from paddy is much higher than the subsidy he is getting. So there needs to be much more innovative schemes for them to, you know, facilitate saying, hey, you know, don't grow this, grow some other cash crop. That's the only way. I mean, and you know, you have to plant a lot more trees and forest.
Okay, so let's move into the second part of our discussion, which is on startups. I mean, you are a successful startup entrepreneur, you mentor startups, you invest in startups, you've sold a startup, you've built a new startup. What are some of the basic mistakes startup entrepreneurs make?
I think not knowing customers. I have done that all the time. I have done every mistake, probably a lot more than given in the books. But I believe, especially the technology entrepreneur, we focus a lot more on technology. And we forget about the end customer. We think about, oh, how do I put this technology to solve that versus actually solving the problem. So that, I think, have been the mistakes I see very regularly, including myself, doing it again and again.
Okay. And a question that I ask a lot of people, you know, should an entrepreneur be alone or should they take a partner?
It really depends. I think finding a right partner is very, very hard. For me, I've been always solo entrepreneur. It's very, very tough, because there are a lot of things you cannot tell and discuss with an employee or even your spouse and things like that. And at that time, you need somebody who can share your load. So it's advisable to have, but for somebody like me, I would not stop in order to find a co-founder to start something. My mindset has been, oh, let's start. If I find somebody worthy enough, if there's a, you know, relationship which we build, that person could become, you know, a co-founder.
And at what stage in a startup journey should they start to look for external capital? Again, you have raised so much money so many times.
It all depends. It's very contextual. Somehow I feel right now that they should not hurry up in raising capital. Ideally, they should raise capital when they don't need it. But it depends on idea. If this is a core deep tech technology, it needs $10 million to develop the product, then probably you would have to raise that kind of money. But if you could find a way to become cash flow positive very quick, I think nothing like it. That is very, very useful. Otherwise, no matter who the investor are, they would try to shortchange you.
Okay. And the next question on startups, you know, a lot of companies I have interacted with, one of the areas that a lot of startups fail is that they don't define their strategy well. What are your thoughts on that?
It's true. I think it's just it's the reflection of not understanding the market and customer. And second, not writing that on the piece of paper. I think everybody has some strategy. Some people have a few weeks, a few months, and a few years. But I think not writing it doesn't help them clarify what they have. And even if they have clarity, the second part, if they don't know the customer, then the strategy is not very useful.
Okay. So, you know, you've been, you've seen a lot of success. I see you're meeting some big people, big names around the world. You remain very humble. What is the secret of your success? And I must qualify, but you know, you're still very young and I'm sure you'll have much, much more. But what is the secret of your success so early in life?
I mean, I don't consider myself to be successful, but I feel that it's just the intent that you, I don't know how I need to define it properly, but there's always this is in my head that you know, there's so much to learn. We know almost nothing, like we are at the tip of the iceberg. So if you take that and then move forward, there's always a, you know, learning aspect in there.
Right. You know, with an exciting company like Harvesting there, and yet having moved back to India for family so the children could grow up in an Indian environment, what keeps you going every day?
The same thing. I mean, I believe, so for me, I started this because I wanted to give back to the society in a way wherein it adds to my career. And also, if in this process, we have a short lifespan, and if I can make few people successful, you know, maybe if I can help people get food, that, you know, keeps me up. And yeah.
And how has been the reaction in different countries, I mean, in Africa or in other parts of Asia? What is the reaction of all the farmers to the work that you've done there?
So they absolutely like it. You know, for example, as I said, our application, we have farmers from as far as Uri. We have farmers using our app from Nigeria and Thailand and so forth. And we haven't spent any money on marketing. Okay. So they definitely like what we are doing. Of course, we need to get much more closer. And I think with this new shift in focus, where we are enabling them to sell their product, I think they would love us a lot. Yeah.
So I've got two more questions left to ask you. One question is, you know, with all the success, there must have been failures. What were some of your learnings from some failures?
All that I have shared so far. So there's a lot of failures. I still feel I do a lot of them, you know, on an everyday basis. Learnings, as I said, you know, become cash flow positive as soon as possible. Otherwise, you know, a lot of investors would try to shortchange. It's the nature of doing business, I guess. That has been the biggest learning for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And final question. You know, a lot of young people, startup entrepreneurs, watch our show. What would your advice be to a startup entrepreneur?
I think just don't wait for an ideal time. Just go do it. And then you don't need money to start. You don't need a co-founders to start. If you have an idea, just start doing it. Things will all fall in place if you do it, if you start it.
Ruchit, thank you very much for coming on the show. Good luck with Harvesting. I'm hoping to see farmer incomes double, treble with all the inputs that you're going to give today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.